is the 311 Radio Show, where we learn all about the work of the Barbados Fire Service, focusing towards a safer Barbados.
Good afternoon to you. Hope you're having a really good Sunday. It's time now for the 311 Radio Show here on VOB 92.9 FM, as we do every Sunday right here on VOB at 1:30 p.m. I am Krista J. Paul, and it's my pleasure to share every Sunday with the Barbados Fire Service. Today, we have another full house. We welcome, first of all, Fire and Life Safety Officer Natasha Ford.
Hi, pleasant good afternoon to each and every one of you.
And the three gentlemen, one of whom we would have had on the program before, but I'm happy to see two retired officers, former Chief Fire Officer Marshall, retired.
Good afternoon, thank you.
And we also have retired former Sub-Officer Paris.
Good afternoon, thank you.
And we have Deputy Chief Fire Officer Henderson Patrick.
Hey, good afternoon and thank you as well, Crystal.
All right, good to see you gentlemen in the studio sharing with us. And last week we would have had a full house because there was anticipation of the demolition to take place down in Probyn Street of the Bridgetown Fire Station, which would have happened in the course of the week. And we would have been sharing memories last week of some of the 65 years, that the fire station would have been occupying that building. And we're going to be having a continuation of that edition today. And we have two retired officers, and I'm looking forward to hearing what these officers have to say. So should we start with these officers?
Most definitely.
All right. So former Chief Fire Officer Marshall, tell us your story. How long were you in the service? When did you join? Were you always stationed at the Bridgetown Station?
I joined the service February 1st, 1975.
Wow.
And after almost 40 years, because I would have retired in 1st of January 2015. Mm-hmm. It was 1 month shy of 40 years. The majority of that time would have been spent at the what is now the Bridgetown, the Bridgetown Fire Station. At our time, back in my day, was the headquarters of the fire service. I had good memories as a recruit, because unlike today, where we have all these facilities for recruiting, and that is very recruited and lived in. So my memories start all the way back from 1975. I eventually served as a fire officer there, and then as a leading fire officer and sub-officer before I went out into the field and to other stations.
All right. So you would have spent quite a bit of time there, quite a bit of your life there. Yeah. Was there any change, were there any changes even in the utilization of space within the building over the period?
Well, I've during those years I've seen the expansion of the building, because the eastern part of the building was added on during my time there.
Okay.
So that's an extension that included the female barracks and additional male barracks, NCO barracks. I also saw the change also included provision being made for female fire officers, because again, when I joined, it was all for male. And I think in 1979, when the females came, we had to give up some of our space to accommodate the females. Initially, there was some reluctance.
I was going to ask that.
Initially, yes. There was some reluctance, but once the females came, they were very well received, and even to this day.
Wonderful. Yes. We actually did have the honor of having the first female fire officer in the program as well.
Yes.
She's retired now.
I can't remember. Gittins?
Yes, oh, yes. Ms. Gittins. Yes, she did join us in the program previously.
But also, while we're there, let us also say hi to Miss Juanita Seal. She was also one of the first. The other, Jackie
Hines.
Yes.
Sandra Bell.
I'm not sure.
Judy Walcott. She was Judy Ewart at the time. She imagine Judy Walcott. And those are six. There were six of them.
Yes.
So you see, all six would have joined at once.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. That is when we started to make our mark. There was a uprise.
Yes, of course. Oh wow, that's wonderful. So share with us maybe a memory or two that really stands out for you, having been in the building.
I think my greatest memories would have been outside the building. I think of the days that we were spent in what is the known as the hose room. If you wanted to, the hose room at that time, we used to repair hoses and so on. But if during the day you want to hide away from work, because there's certain duties that were assigned to officers during the day, if you're not in fireground, if you're not in classes, then there's certain duties, routine duties that you had to carry out. But if you want to hide away, you'll find a fellow being hiding away in the hose room. That is where a lot of the
if people knew where the hideaway was, it wasn't quite a hideaway, was it?
But, no, you were not supposed to be there. Okay. You were not supposed to be there. But they knew where to find us. But if you want to just get away from any routine work during the day, that is where you hide out. But most of my memories would have been outside of the station.
Okay, all right. Care to share one? I mean, since you're here, care to share one of those memories?
Oh, I always remember, this had been with me all the time, the YMPC fire. Yes. I was a rookie firefighter at the time. Then the YMPC was actually on well alight. And I went there myself and another rookie fire officer, he's passed on now, Rice. We were manning a branch, and this branch was a particular branch. It was called a London branch. It was very heavy, and these were two young boys with a hose that was very well charged. And for some reason, someone called away. And the other officer was sharing the branch with me to do another job. And here was this young man manning this very heavy branch, fully charged. And the then deputy chief fire officer came to me and he said, move from here, this area, and come over to another area. The truth is, I was too embarrassed to tell him that I couldn't move. But at that time, one of the characteristics of a fire officer, you had to be strong.
Yes.
Unlike today, you had to be able to eat what we call eat smoke. You had to be able to bear some heat, and you had to be strong. You had to be able to carry hose full of a lot of pressure on and so on. But at that time, I was unable to move, and he's asking me to shift position, and I'm saying, "Okay, yes, sir," and I'm trying to shift position. I wasn't mind enough to say that I can't move.
Right.
But then he recognized that I couldn't move, and he actually came and helped me. But he was pretty embarrassed at not being able to move the hose. And I always took with me that particularly embarrassing episode.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm sure you didn't have any other witnesses, unless you got the jeering when you got back to the station.
No, funny enough, many people didn't understand what was happening. Okay. That was between me and the then deputy chief.
Right.
Because other people were caught up in the actual fire at the time.
Yes, yes.
So they didn't understand what was happening, but it was just me and him.
Okay. And now everybody knows. Huh? Years later, now everybody knows. But it's all good, it's all good. Thank you very much, retired former Chief Fire Officer Marshall. Now to retired former Sub-Officer Paris. Welcome again.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
And at what point did you join the fire service, and for how long would you have been stationed at the Bridgetown building?
Well, I joined the Paris Fire Service at the 1st of September 1981. I was privileged to be with at least 18 recruits, and my training was at headquarters station. And I never thought I would be a fire officer, but my first as a youngster growing up, I always say I would like to be a police or a fireman.
Wow.
But in my years coming along, I didn't make my mind where I would go. But at least Ash Wednesday, 1977, when Central Park Church burned down, I was privileged to be there at the time. I used to sing the choir there. And when that church burned that day, I was very hurt. I said to myself, at least I know I have to be a fire officer.
Did you say sing in the song in the choir?
I sing in Central Park Church choir, yes, ma'am.
Okay, okay.
And when it burned in 1977, I was privileged to be there at Ash Wednesday after service. And I was in the church and not reading a book, and the church just standing had these large bats in the church playing a boat. And I said to myself, well, bats playing a boat ain't there. Bats don't be playing ain't there. So I said, go stand and look. So my acknowledge half a church, you shouldn't go half caught. It was on fire. And when I ran to the fire officer up at Dawes Plantation, where there was a fire camp fire there, they told me they were out of water, and the tenant came back down there, the whole church thought was on fire. So all I could do was run to the St. Blood Boys School and told Mr. Mosley that the church is on fire, and also around Paul Lashley, to which he didn't believe me. But he came, and he was in a maze, and I ran to school and told Mr. Mosley, the church is on fire, I want some boys to help me take some things to the church. So that's what I did. We took out a lot of books and surplus and our cassettes and go to the church, and spent about 15, 20 minutes, they told us to get to the church, and the top came in. And I stood that whole day in church, I cried to see the church going down. But I said to myself, at least I don't know what my occupation will be, a fire officer. So I joined the first service in 1st September 1981. And my first experience at headquarters was training. I was a bit scared of it because we had a rescue man from the tower. And that was a ticklish one, but we learned to do it. And it was a joy being at headquarters. I never was being transferred there. I was transferred from headquarters then to the airport, then St. John Station, but I was never privileged to transfer to headquarters station to work in a long period of time there. I had temporary times there with fire officers, the which I had one experience, my first time in the control room, the morning, 9 o'clock, we get a call for a friend at Wick Park Road. I nervous now, and this lady called, come quick. I said, come quick, where? She didn't tell me where, but then another guy called back, and says there's a fire at the gas station in Wick Park Road. So when he said that, I turned the first appliance. So while they attend the fire, then the call back to me met pumps too. I said, well, there's got to be a big fire. To which, before it started, I heard this big explosion. I couldn't tell where it came from, but it sounded real hard in Bridgetown.
Wow.
And it was gas station that had been blown up there.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fire. And that was my first experience in the control room. I had a course room. My mom was there, and everybody had gone and leave me there. So he had to try and handle all the lines, all the phone calls, to which it was a bit hard, but a period of time at headquarters, you get to learn a lot of things at headquarters station. We call it the action station, because it is a station where you get most calls for most fires, you have the most biggest area to cover, most holes St. Michael, Protestant, George, Protestant, Christchurch, Protestant Thomas, so you mostly get a lot of calls from headquarters into fires. And my most experience out there is at other stations for the first, and my years, 36 years in the fire service. I was privileged to work with for these five chiefs. And my last chief, now where I retired from, is Mr. Mayor. But it's a job I do all over again. From my time I was there, I have worked with Mr. Marshall too at St. James Station. That time he wasn't the union fire officer, but we were all fire officers. And we had some good times working at the stations together. We used to work long hours, but the hours were very long in those days, but we men for us were really together, and we had good times and fighting and my time in the fire service.
And when did you retire?
1st of January 2018.
Okay, wow. Is it that everybody would have said, had some time spent in the control room, have different time spent in different areas within the service?
Yes.
In the station?
Yes. As Marshall said, we spend time in the whole room to get together from the NCOs. But the NCOs will find us. Where are you all, guys? Come over here. I mean, those were days that we had some real strict NCOs. You know? We had guys in the NCOs so that were very strict. But they met us for officers. They fully for me. They fight first, those guys. And they learn us how to fight first. You can't dodge. You have to be there in the line of fire. But it's an all-learning process for everybody. You know, in those days we used to do punching. We used to get BSS. We don't remember BSS.
What is
breathing apparatus?
We don't know the terminology, so you have to break it down. The jargon is different,
right? So when is there BSS? We were talking about, you would see the guys with face masks on, a pack on their back, right. And what that is compressed air, which allows us to breathe in these toxic environments.
Right. Wow. Okay.
Breathing apparatus sets, you only be in unique cases that the older firearms would have put on a BSS, because as I said earlier, one of the characteristics of the fire, you have to learn to eat some small ones. So regardless of what the situation is, you used to find yourself going into that situation. You didn't bother about health and safety at that time. You just wanted to do a job.
Yeah, job done. Yeah. Is that one thing? I had a group at headquarters called the 18. When guys get their mind burning, and at least the structure would be still whole. But it burned, but it's not a year. It's just punch fires in those days.
Wow, punch fire.
Yes, these are all the jargon, all the terms.
They're coming out, man.
Normally when you hear fire eater, smoke eater, you think it turns to some person who's probably on a cruise ship or at a hotel dancing, whatever, but nah.
Okay.
It was great though. It was good time in the service. Yes, we had our challenges with some waters. We had 600 gallons breakfast trucks. But it was good.
The old Dennis.
yes. We learned about the old Dennis last year. We got a history lesson. Would you have worked on the? Tell us about that. Would you have worked on that truck particularly?
Good engineer. The one that appliance was out of. It was out of appliance then.
Commission.
It was commission. It was just there as an antique. It's not working anymore.
Okay.
But we have purchased it. It was a nice vehicle.
I would have had a piece of it during my training, because of the Pampas kept me. That was part of the appliance, equipment that we had to use. And that day, we had to actually wind the Pampas kept up to the, wind it up to the top of the tower and we were doing rescue. And so you had to have something in your shoulders. Not press button and it go up.
I was gonna ask what happens now. So aside from that and the BSS. All right. Aside from those, what other changes would you have seen over the years from 1975 you still observe some changes now in 2019, 2020, but what are some of the changes you would have experienced over the years?
It's mostly the technology. You press buttons now and get action. We actually it was manual. It was manual work. Something as simple as the reports preparation.
Mm-hmm.
We used to spend our time in the control room at nights, learn to draw lines, because there was not prepared. There was not Excel document. And we had to, the documents had to be prepared, reports had to be prepared almost as an Excel.
Mm-hmm.
So I would spend my time at nights learning to draw lines. Everybody had a ruler, had a rule.
Wow.
And you see us during the day just drawing lines, preparing documents and everything. Everything is now laid out for you.
In those days, the institute has a bulletin sheet, a very long sheet, with every sort of information to put your fur in. And different sections of it. But when you don't put your front in the bulletin sheet, then you have read it on for a report. And it all was paperwork. It was no computer in those days. And all the information you took from the fair was in the notebook you had. And you come back and put your information on the bulletin sheet. And you had to make sure it was numbered right, because you have to get all your fairs right in a sequence that it won't be out.
Right.
Everybody first then, from all the students had come into headquarters station, and they were all being numbered.
Mm-hmm.
So, but any month when you do a monthly report, you have a new month of first we had in, but that particular month, and it was hard work, but we did it.
Mm-hmm.
Till I think in the 80s then, we decided to go to the computer system, where all the guys had to go and learn introduction to computer. To be, like, I had to
Wow.
it was challenging then to change for a service into a computer system.
Yes.
But
But you got it done.
We got it done.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, Deputy Chief Fire Officer Henderson Patrick, you've been quiet up to this time as we let the time to the retired officers. What take do you have on this historic season for the Barbados Fire Service?
You know, as these officers were speaking, I said these guys are from the traditional side of things, and I am from more contemporary, but that's not really true because I am also doing 34 years in the service, so I would have spent quite a bit of time with both our Chief Marshal and also worked with Mr. Paris. I, like both of them, had my recruiting experience at the Bridgetown Fire Station. I joined the service on the 15th of January, 1986, so I just completed 34 years in January, just gone. What was unique about my experience in training is that we also trained overseas individuals from the British Virgin Islands, and we also had individuals from Grenada at that particular point in time during my batch of training. And it was something that the fire service used to do. In the past, we would have officers who would come for recruit training from those territories, which I think my batch, or maybe one batch after mine, would have been the last time that we had those individuals coming in to be a part of the training. But that was also a very good experience. We didn't have the pump escape experience like they would have said, but we had what they call the 45-foot ladder, which, again, it was a manual experience. This is not any hydraulic stuff. And most of the operations in the fire service is generally a four-man operation. So when you're recruiting, you're put in teams of four. And irrespective of how heavy this ladder was and how bony you were as a recruit, you had to get this ladder extended up to the top of the tower. And that's only the first part. After that, you have to run the ladder. And then the third phase would be to rescue people from up there. And you know, it is one thing to come here and sit and talk about that experience right now, because there were a number of things that surrounded that. We did not have any safety nets or anything around, or any sponge or anything around this. And therefore, you had to listen to the instruction of the officers, and you had to follow those instructions to the letter. When they tell you that you have to have that three-point contact and one hand has to be on the ladder and both feet and so on, you had to follow those instructions. And during my years, we have not had any major incidents where people would have fallen from those heights down to the ground. I'm talking about the top of the tower that we can see where the station was. Like these officers too, you know, you've had your various experiences. I remember as a youngster in the control room, because that's where you really started your firefighting experience. Once you come off the square, you had to then start to manage and master the control room. Because inside there, you learned a lot of things. You get to learn the officers. And today, you know, it is not like how it was then. You could come and ask any officer that was a control room attendant what were the numbers, and I'm talking about the registration numbers of the appliances, all of the appliances. And you would ask him about the call signs for the officers and everything, because when one individual came to the control room to relieve the other individual, he had to alliterate every single one of those details to the officer that was coming in. He would tell him where all the appliances were. He would tell him where the officers were. And all of that type of information that young officer had to have at his fingertip to be able to pass on. But one of my first experiences, I had two experiences that gave me shivers. And when you get shivers, you know that something is not quite right. One was my first experience was a house fire in Dean's. I think that's Dean's Land. This is just by Eastman Corner, going up to Station Hill. Mm-hmm. And that was a structural fire. I think there were about two or three houses that were involved in that. And the challenging part is that you had to be in the control room by yourself at that time. Because everybody else, when you dispatch the other appliances that they would request and so on, you were there by yourself. And you can imagine that you are a young officer just off the square, spending a few months and so on in the service, and you have this big responsibility of not only taking care of that particular incident, but any other incident that is going on, you have to be taking that information. You have to log that information. And there's nobody next to you to tell you or to give you any help. So that was a challenge. And then the other one that gave me some chills was a call that I'd received for an accident. It was in Maxwell at that time, a vehicle accident. And I think it was a vehicle that ran into a fence. There were two like that. But on both occasions, there was some type of impalement of the fencing object into the person. I couldn't see that, but you know, by how people express themselves when they call and how they were agitated and so on, you got the sense that it was not a good thing. Yeah. And when the officers got there and then gave their update on what was going on, you know, you said to yourself as a control room attendant that is one that's really on you. You know, but my experience at Bridgetown has been a very good one. Just like the other officers who spoke before, I saw the various changes. We also had, in that section that Mr. Marshall spoke about, we had the accounts department in that section. And in those days, you had fire officers that used to function within those departments, those areas of the service. And then over the years, we migrated to civilian staff to take care of those functions and so on. And the final thing that I'm going to mention before we go on is that when you pass by Bridgetown Station on Proben Street and you look at the station, you used to see a whole, it looked like a mural of glass.
Yes.
And that was placed in that area years ago. When I first joined the service, that was just an open area. We used to call pigeonholes. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why we blocked it off, because the birds and everything used to come through there. And every now and again, but probably every morning, we used to have to take the hose and so on and actually wash out those pigeonholes and so on. So that was one of the changes that we saw from what the station was years ago and to what it was a few days ago before it was demolished.
I think we should have an extended edition of this program because we have already come to the end of this one. Yes. But I just would love in maybe 20 seconds, Officer Patrick, to just share your thoughts. Now, seeing the demolition take place, what comes to mind now? A flood of memories, I'm sure. But what comes to mind? What are your thoughts on it?
Well, you know, just before the building was demolished, we invited an individual to take some pictures. And it was only when he sent back those pictures to me that a note of sadness actually came over me, because you were involved in moving individuals and all that kind of thing. It never really made that much of a difference until you saw those pictures. And then having stood there and see the building being demolished, there were two things. One, there was a note of sadness because we cannot get back there. Mm-hmm. And that memory, although it will remain a memory, but we will not be able to see, except with pictures and so on, what that part of our history was, or part of the destination, the journey that we had started. But I am heartened by the fact that these things need to happen in order that progress might take place. And I'm sure that even though we may not see it in our eyes right now, when the new fire station is built, and it encapsulates the headquarters and all the other aspects that we envision, that we will have something to be proud of as well, too, when that occurs.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you very much, officers, for sharing your time with us here on the 311 Radio Show. Retired former Chief Fire Officer Marshall, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Retired former Sub-Officer Paris.
Thank you, ma'am.
Deputy Chief Fire Officer Henderson Patrick.
It was a pleasure.
And Fire and Life Safety Officer Natasha Ford.
Always a pleasure, and thank you.
And before we close today's program, I must say good afternoon. You know, we try to remember those who listen once they have their name. Miss Thomas, good afternoon to you. Aline Thomas, an ardent listener to this to the program. She's a life listener, but she definitely listens to VOB for the 311 Radio Show. So I want to say thank you very much to you and all those who definitely tune in. Don't miss it on a Sunday. And if you miss any of today's edition, remember you can listen to the podcast on VOB929.com. And there are the podcasts there for all the previous programs of the 311 Radio Show. And I'm Krista J. Paul giving you thanks. God bless. Have a wonderful week. And remember,
fire prevention is our intention.
That was the 311 Radio Show, as we heard from the Barbados Fire Service. Join us again next week right here on VOB 92.9 FM at 1:30 p.m. for the next edition of the 311 Radio Show.